Congressman Bishop, thank you so much for joining us today. We're so excited to have you.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to have a chance to chat with you and with your viewers.
Oh, super. Well, and before we dive into all things immigration, I'd just like to take a moment to introduce you to our viewers. I think a lot of them know you, but some of them may not. So Congressman Dan Bishop represents the 8th District of North Carolina, and he's been serving since 2019. He is a member of both the Judiciary Committees and the Homeland Security Committees, and he's been one of our greatest allies in the fight to secure the border and return sanity to our immigration system. And a lot of you, a lot of our viewers will know him as being a wonderful advocate and a fighter in the investigation and impeachment of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. And that was a battle well fought. We'll dive into that a little bit later. But let me just talk big picture for the moment here. We're seeing a crisis of unprecedented proportions at our border. I mean, we're seeing record numbers of encounters, record numbers of suspected terrorists being apprehended, record numbers of asylum claims, record numbers of fentanyl deaths, and record number of dollars spent by state and local jurisdictions who are paying the price. Actually, they have the privilege, right, of paying the price. They're bearing the brunt of this crisis. So how is your district faring? How are they feeling the impact of this border crisis?
Well, it is an unfathomable imposition of harm on a nation by a president of the United States. And it's amazing to consider that this would, that anything like this would be embraced by any ideology of a major political party in America. In my district, it's been long said that every state is a border state, and it certainly is true. Immediate things come to pass in Greensboro, North Carolina, a big campus of a school, a secondary school, has been, taken over as a DHS facility for unaccompanied minors to be located for a period of time. Of course, we know that to be a way station to their distribution around the country, very often to, quote, sponsors who've not been vetted well by government, situations where now, and you almost can't keep up with the stats. Back when the New York Times wrote about this, it was 65,000 unaccompanied minors who've gone essentially missing. DHS has lost track of them. That number had gotten up to 85,000 last I heard. I know it's surging northward. So we have that in North Carolina. Iredell County, just north of Charlotte, the sheriff had a stupendously large fentanyl bust of traffic on interstate. But as the sheriffs have said, and officers have come and visited me in Washington to explain that narcotics, fentanyl particularly, are cheaper on the streets than ever in their experience, and they see the human wreckage as people are more and more caught up in addiction and or simply poisonings for taking a pill that they think may be an illicit Xanax maybe, and then it turns out to be laced with fentanyl and someone's dead. Most extreme version, not directly related to migration, but the sort of disorder that it breeds, the sense of chaos and a loss of a culture of order across the country, is part of this fabric that we see. Perhaps that's too far a stretch to cover, but we're thinking in my hometown. I've just arrived back home in Charlotte from Washington this morning, but to go to the funerals tomorrow, or one of the funerals of the 4 police officers slain among 8 shot in an event this week in Charlotte. And I think the American people are despairing and beside themselves about the chaos and disorder, but it goes top to bottom, and the migration system, the controls of the Biden administration's dedicated destroying of the border security in America is something that I hear about everywhere I go. And polls, of course, indicate that it's the top concern on Americans' minds. And that's a remarkable fact itself.
It is. It is. You know, and talking a little bit about law enforcement, I know you're a law and order guy, and law enforcement is extremely important to you. You talked about fentanyl, but how else do you think that this border crisis is impacting state and local law enforcement? I mean, what have you seen in your communities?
Well, we have in North Carolina, I'll tell you another thing that's happening today is the legislature, after having wrestled over the issue for a number of years, is passing and will pass, I'm sure, well, passing, I guess, well, will pass over a gubernatorial veto, and they're passing it for the first time today, a bill that will require North Carolina sheriffs to cooperate with ICE detainers. One of the things that we have seen in North Carolina is the, you know, some people sort of make a political show of not cooperating with ICE. Now, of course, coming from the other end, the Biden administration has effectively kind of decimated ICE. And one of the big arguments over time, particularly led by states like Texas and Louisiana, has been that the Biden administration has declined to follow the law. That's what, that was the substance of the Mayorkas impeachment. From my perspective, is that Mayorkas, in issuing instructions across DHS, has brazenly defied mandates, statutory mandates by Congress about detaining migrants. Well, working the other end of it, woke sheriffs in North Carolina, particularly in the urban counties, have made a political show of saying even when ICE is issuing detainers to try to take custody of people who are migrants who've committed crime and they're in their jails, that when they're released, instead of cooperating with the detainer requests, they'll release them into the community. So you have notorious cases where domestic violent offenders, for example, have offended repeatedly, strangling in one case a woman after having been taken into custody and held in the jail and while there was a detainer pending. So you see, I mean, it's just the ways in which it complicates and impairs the life, flourishing, and well-being of Americans almost can't be counted. And I'll bet if we chatted a little more, I could give you a bunch more examples of impacts on the lives of North Carolinians.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. You would think that the local law enforcement, the sheriffs, their priority would be safety of the citizens and to, you know, keep these people locked up. And if the Biden administration is not enforcing anything, actually wants to put a detainer on an alien, you know that person's a bad actor. Of all the people to give, you know, over to ICE, those would be the ones.
Absolutely right. And just like I'm confident that the Biden administration's posture has not and does not reflect the will or the desire of the American people in any kind of numbers. This is also a small minority of sheriffs in North Carolina, but what the legislature has recognized is that it is an abuse of law. And one of the things that's kind of a theme in my life, and you mentioned I'm a law and order guy, but we see this as a political phenomenon, a devoted effort to take executive positions that are assigned under our constitutional system with enforcing law, specifically for the purpose of nullifying law. And that has an odious background politically across the history of the country, but it is a fundamental, and I'll keep it nonpartisan, it is a fundamental tenet of the ideological philosophy of some, of some folks in the country. And I think it's intolerable and is dangerous. And we will not get on a path to making things work better in the country until we deal with it.
Well, I totally agree. Speaking of lawlessness, actually, that was the next subject I was going to cover. Let's talk about parole. The president has launched various illegal parole programs, and those of us in the immigration circles have been talking about them nonstop for months. So first, you started releasing everyone apprehended at the border, releasing them into the United States on parole. Then the president starts flying them in, so they just fly over the border. And these are people who have no legal right to be here. I mean, they're inadmissible aliens. They have no visas, no documents, no nothing. And what's really scary about these programs is that often these aliens don't get vetted very well. And, you know, the vetting is only as good as what Homeland Security has access to in their databases. And we often don't get good information from other countries. Either they're unwilling or they don't have it themselves. They don't maintain databases like we do. And dangerous criminals are beginning to slip through the cracks, you know, and this is sadly what we saw, for example, recently with the murder of Lake and Riley in Georgia. Absolutely tragic.
Absolutely right.
And what do you think the impact of these programs are? I mean, isn't this encouraging more lawlessness, chaos, just as you were talking about, more illegal immigration? It's awful.
Absolutely right. There's a notion among some, the Biden administration, Secretary Mayorkas have come, they always have come in for this. A long time. Secretary Mayorkas would testify to us and time again that the border's secure, that everything is fine. That facade has finally fallen. But what we now see, Secretary Mayorkas was before us, and you have in the case you mentioned, Lake and Riley, her assailant was a fellow named Jose Ibarra, and Secretary Mayorkas was before Homeland Security Committee a couple of weeks ago, and I asked him because, as you point out, they just do this sweeping idea, all Venezuelans coming in, you're going to grant, and certain other categories, you're going to just grant, you're going to tell them, say they're paroled into the country. Well, it is lawless. Parole is in the statute, and it says case-by-case consideration, and of course, they just wave their hand over that they say we are doing it case-by-case, but they're not. They're doing it categorically. They create, in effect, new visa categories. And that don't exist in law. And then with the other language in the statute is that they have to be paroled for significant public benefit or an urgent humanitarian concern. And when Secretary Mayorkas appeared before us, I asked him which it was with respect to Jose Ibarra. Which one was this guy who, you know, hung out for a while in New York City, committed a petty crime there, actually pretty serious crime, endangering a child, and then goes to join his brother also in the country illegally and committing crime in Georgia. They commit other crimes, they abscond, they don't show up. And then ultimately, Jose Ibarra, you know, drags Lake and Riley off her running course and beats her to death. And the question very much is, how did you exercise authority under the law to let him in? Was it significant public benefit, like a witness testifying in an important legal case, or was it some urgent humanitarian concern? Well, he said he didn't know, to me. And then a couple of days later, he was testifying before the Senate, and he told Senator Hawley. He actually said he couldn't speak about a specific case because by then the information had come out. Lindsey Graham had gotten his hands on it, and the document shows he was released because they didn't have detention space at a particular detention facility. Well, that's neither an urgent humanitarian concern or a significant public benefit. Exactly. But he didn't want to be pinned down on the fact that yet again he's engaged the entire department in a wholesale, lawless attack on our constitutional system in the way that they've proceeded. That has to be corrected. That kind of phenomenon breeds a certain sort of conduct across the countryside. And you can't hold a country together if we don't have a notion that the law is going to prevail over the desires of public officials.
I totally agree. And, you know, speaking of holding officials accountable. We know that Americans want it. We know that Americans are really want a change in course on immigration policy. What do you think we can do to hold our officials accountable? Now, recently we had the articles of impeachment sent over from the House to the Senate, and the Senate buried them. I mean, just in wave of a hand, they were dismissed as inconsequential.
Yep.
And I believe from our research, that's the first time in U.S. history that articles of impeachment have ever been simply dismissed by the Senate. You know, what kind of message do you think that sends? I mean, you all, and you in particular, were one of the leaders, went to great lengths to investigate and document the, inactivity, the lawlessness, the failure to follow the law. You went through this painstaking process, sent over the articles of impeachment. You know, their job as the Senate, their constitutional duty is to adjudicate those articles of impeachment. I mean, in terms of holding members accountable, what message do you think that sends to the American people?
Well, it's a great question. And I will tell you, one of the most, the greatest consternation I've encountered spending now almost 5 years in Congress is the degree to which Congress is inert. Congress is in a status quo. Now, there are good people in Congress who are fighting to do something. And this is a bipartisan a fact of life. Certainly the dismissal of those articles of impeachment, very seriously pursued and compiled and passed on the floor of the House under our constitutional system. Certainly it was a majority in the Senate, which is Democrats, who decided not to take that up and to just sort of give it the back of the hand, which is an astonishing departure from tradition and history, which they'll have to bear the consequences for. But Republicans as well, I mean, Republicans have been unable to summon ourselves to go to the mat for the American people. You can exercise certain leverage. You know, there have been leverage point after leverage point in Congress, in the House of Representatives, that have been allowed to go by the Republican conference. And that's another one. We could use the H.R. 2 or something very similar to it, could have been a condition upon the foreign aid bill that Congress passed a couple of weekends ago. But we haven't seen the willingness to do that. One of the tools that I think is particularly hopeful is state attorneys general, actually, because if you think about that particular office in the American landscape, you have state governors. Their powers are almost exclusively directed internally to their states. Certainly, it's overwhelmingly that's the main purpose of the state attorney general as well. But state attorneys general are the persons who litigate on behalf of the state, and states can themselves suffer grievous injuries, we've already made reference to, vis-a-vis other states or vis-a-vis the United States government. And
so you and Congressman Chip Roy, I have all this in my notes here. You introduced a really interesting bill called Sue for Immigration Enforcement Act. Sue for Immigration Enforcement Act. And tell us a little bit about that bill, because it touches on the attorney general powers and holding officials accountable. So tell us a little bit about that bill and why you think it'll help.
It does indeed. And what we have seen is that because of the way the court system operates in the United States of America, and Article 3 provisions in the Constitution about case or controversy, one of the requirements your viewers will have heard a good bit about is that any party to be able to litigate in a civil case against any other party has to have standing. They have to have a specific injury they can point to. They have to be able to show that a remedy the court can grant will provide redress. And so there's a general requirement of standing. Attorneys general, state attorneys general, have been very active in trying to secure enforcement of immigration law. And they've had a number of very, very important successes. You can go back to the DACA program. It was state attorneys general bringing litigation that obtained the invalidation of that program from the United States Supreme Court. But in a case that the Supreme Court decided last summer called United States versus Texas, the Supreme Court, the issue there was, as I mentioned earlier, there are all these detention mandates that Congress has enacted into statute. You shall detain migrants in a certain category, particularly if they've committed crimes, if they've been incarcerated in states and so forth. And Secretary Mayorkas just issued a memorandum early in his in his as soon as he was sworn in, that said, you will never detain someone merely because Congress has said you'll do it in the, with those circumstances. And that's the as I said, the foundation of the articles of impeachment against Mayorkas, but also appropriately so, state attorneys general sued or attempted to sue over that, and the United States Supreme Court's held ultimately that if that whenever there's a even if the, there's a mandate like that, there still remains, because of the circumstances that can arise, there still remains some level of prosecutorial discretion, some decision on the part of the Department of Homeland Security whether or not to act against a particular migrant. And because that exists, and because you can never put the courts can never be put in the position of deciding for the executive branch of the federal government whether to prosecute, that they can't allow state attorneys general to have standing to sue. Now, in that decision, though, Justice Kavanaugh wrote for the court, unless Congress makes it really clear that that is what Congress intends to happen. And so I think that was an unfortunate decision by the United States Supreme Court, but it is what it is. And it certainly took up the opportunity telegraphed by the Supreme Court for Congress to provide specifically that, yes, when you have that set of circumstances in those particular types of cases that I've described, we ought to enact a provision that says we do intend for the federal government to be able to be held accountable by state attorneys general. So that's what the Sue for Enforcement for Immigration Enforcement Act does. It's been passed in a couple of different forms. Well, it's been on the floor of the House. And you know, again, I don't think that'll be taken up by the Democratic Senate who summarily kicked to the curb the articles of impeachment against Mayorkas, unless they're essentially compelled to because the House leadership says we're going to require it as a condition for something that's coming up. So, you know, I'm always one I think there are a lot of messaging bills that come out of Congress that are cosmetic and fake and don't really amount to anything. I think it's always important to be clear. We've introduced this legislation. Again, it's got the attention of House leadership, and it's actually gone through on the floor in one form already. It can be a standalone and should go again probably. So it can come up in a number of ways in the Senate. But ultimately, it's going to take, again, the House, Republican-led House, to go to the mat and say, we're going to insist that this be done.
Yeah, it's very important legislation. And that decision you're talking about from June of last year, that was very unfortunate. We've already lost a couple of other immigration-related cases based on standing since then. So this is something we need to tackle. And, you know, who is more injured, if you ask me, than the states that have to, the state and locals? And all you need to do is watch the news and watch what's going on in New York and Chicago and Denver and all of these communities that are inundated with migrants and have no place to put them. And even when you do have places to put them, that housing costs soar and you're scrambling to find work and shelter and education, and the kids go in the schools, and the state and locals bear the brunt of the immigration policies.
Not only is that so, if I could add something quickly on that, what you see, and it's very disturbing, is you see these injuries occurring, but what you can see increasingly is they're not some byproduct or, you know, unintentional or regretted impacts of some larger, you know, super humanitarian policy. These are intended. They are targeted. Data just emerged that Homeland Security had sought over time, we had heard about and had been sort of blocked from getting, because one of the other completely lawless activities is this program where Secretary Mayorkas has set up so that people can apply in their native cities for the ability to enter the United States, even though they're inadmissible aliens, and they'll fly them into airports all across the interior of the United States from their home city. And hundreds of thousands, you know, are in that category. and as well. And that, so a list finally got released, because they said earlier there were security reasons they couldn't do it, but a list got released of the airports in the United States to which people were being flown and how many. And the thing that was striking about it was the largest numbers by far were two cities in Florida, Fort Lauderdale and Miami. And it's almost as if, well, it's not almost as if, this is exactly what's happening. You look at Texas and Louisiana, their borders, and Arizona, their borders are such that they're being flooded. And then Florida, not so much. But that's where the Biden administration then concentrates the flow of persons that they have no power to bring here anyway, no authority, and they're just doing it. Yeah. And it is an astonishingly, I mean, institutionally, when you think about how our government operates, that set of circumstances, that approach to the conduct of public affairs cannot continue.
Yeah.
And so I think that's, we've got to keep doing everything we can. If I had my druthers, if I were in a more senior position in the House, we would be far more aggressive about seeing to it that the American people's rights are restored.
Well, I think that's why, you know, that legislation of yours is so important. This attitude that we know it's illegal, but we're going to do it anyway until someone stops us. I mean, I've never, ever seen this in my life before. You know, we could go back and look at the Obama administration. And I was working here at FAIR during the Obama administration. But President Biden makes Obama look almost like a saint in comparison, because he drew the line somewhere. He drew the line. He actually deported criminals. And he did a lot of bad things. They abused paroles, probably where President Biden got all those ideas. He abused parole and he set up programs, but he did deport some criminals. And he didn't, I mean, the scale of what we're seeing, I think that's what I'm getting at, is
you're absolutely
unprecedented.
Correct. It is. And I it's hard to know. I've spent a lot of time talking to Americans, some political contexts, many contexts that are not political. And as I say, there's this palpable sense that the way things are supposed to run is slipping away. And here's the main thing that I think is disturbing about that. This is not historically a surprise. The founders well understood, they designed into government the human nature that people would be lawless. And if aggrandized with too much power, they set up a system that's designed to have checks and balances and to correct that. But again, what I'm saying is the first offense is in its most brazen and bodacious form is depicted in the Biden administration, the way they just do these things without regard to law and are defiant and brazen about it. But then the other problem is that Congress, by virtue of it's not just that it's divided between the president's political party and the opposition party. That's not the whole thing. It is that somehow it's been defanged and rendered feckless, so that the minority party, well, the party that controls, opposition party that controls only one house, cannot summon the spine to condition agreements on legislation that the party in control of the Senate, the president's party, desperately wants, somehow cannot bring itself to condition agreement to that on fixing these very basic problems of abiding by the law. And the American people are endangered by it. So when we're reaching out to look for tools like state attorneys general and to enhance their authority under law to try to impose some accountability, it's not really the optimal answer, but it is an answer. And it is one that in this moment in time has proved one of the best. So that's kind of a long-winded way of saying it, except I think folks need to understand how grave the challenge is. This is not just bickering over some petty politics thing. It's not even a close call over different interpretations of how a law is. It's just out and out lawless.
It is. And I, my feeling is this open borders philosophy, this lawlessness, I mean, I look at it as almost like a cancer. And if you don't attack it, it will take over. I mean, and we need people. We need, you know, we need members like you. We need other people. We need Americans out there, you know, to stand up and fight for what's right and to fight for law and order. That's why, you know, generations of immigrants have been coming here lawfully, right? Is because of the rule of law and because everyone is treated equally in the eyes of the law. And when you stop enforcing the laws, you take the very pillars of society away, the reason why America is that beacon to the world. So it's I feel the urgency with you. I really do. And I that leads me to another question. You talked a little bit about opportunities in Congress. Certainly there was a lot of tension back and forth with the spending bills, the government funding bills and the foreign aid bills. You know, these were all opportunities to pass something. And you touched on that briefly. Where do we go from here? You know, Congress Republicans, you know, sadly, didn't attach any immigration enforcement provisions, not even one core provision that might have changed the direction. It's very frustrating for those of us, you know,
it's unfathomable.
Yeah, so there's so few chances to get anything done in Washington. And when you're looking at an administration that really doesn't care whether what it does is legal or not, you know, you need to force change somehow. Where do we go from here the rest of the session? What does holding our officials accountable look like? Where do we go?
Yeah, it's very hard to put it. I mean, the fact is that the ultimate recourse is elections, but when you come to where we've gotten, and you have Americans have sort of split the Congress in the way that they have seen fit to do, and you see the performance that you've seen. I one thing that I worry about is that people will see the ineptitude or the failure to perform of the opposition party they put in charge of one house of Congress and be inclined, they always want to make a change. I think the change they have to make is they have to go directly to the source where the lawlessness has prevailed and make a change there. But they can't give up working on their Congress. I guess that's and it's a very tall order. There are a lot of powers of incumbency. There's a lot of money that is that supports for various interests and factions, own pecuniary purposes, favors the continuation of the status quo, and so it's hard to fight. But I can tell you from the time, and I spent last Saturday as an example. All day on the road in North Carolina, speaking to gatherings of people, and I made some people mad in some of the things I had to say.
Part of the job,
but
I guess.
It is, but I can tell you that it wasn't the crowds that I made mad. They were unbelievably responsive, but I made some lawmakers and colleagues mad, who have been content to let this status quo, this malaise in Congress persist. And so I think the American people are increasingly impatient with those who will not do what they say they will do once they're in office. And I think just by observing things, I think they're fed up. They're fed up with the chaos that has resulted from, in the most obvious, in other words, it was as predictable as the day following the night that these things would come to pass, and come to pass in a big way because the numbers were so large. Americans are seeing it across the landscape, and it doesn't matter which party, political party they're part of. Now, there obviously are fringes on each side, but the vast majority of the American people are fed up with this. They want it. They want government to do again what government is supposed to do, especially the federal government.
Yeah, I agree. And we do hope. We hope all of our members and our viewers today, they go out, they learn about their elected officials, Democrats, Republicans. You know, we have FAIR has on our website a voting report So you can go see how members have voted on immigration-related legislation. So we have that out there for people. But it's important that people, Americans who care about immigration, learn. They get educated and they go out there and they make their voices heard. Otherwise, nothing will change.
And you know, this asks a lot of the American people, but there's one further thing to say about it, which is do not be, let me put it this way, be skeptical. It's funny to hear me say this because I'm an elected official, but be skeptical of your elected officials and the things that they tell you. I know that American people are busy. They're, especially today, inflation's killing families, budgets and everything, and they're overwhelmed. But they really need to hold their elected officials to account. And if their elected officials' actions do not match their rhetoric, if they attempt to satisfy constituents with messaging, with cosmetics and fakery, when you can see that they're not standing up on the key moments, you know, take the appropriate action. No one has an entitlement to remain as a member of Congress. And voters really, I think they need to be more active about throwing people out who are not doing what they need them to do.
I hope you're right. I hope so. Say, as we wind up here, this has been a wonderful conversation. We have all sorts of chaos going on, the crisis at the border. We have elections in the fall. There's so much at stake. What parting message do you have for our viewers? What would you tell them? Do you have a hopeful message? Do you want to spark a fire? What would be your message to our viewers?
I do have great confidence in the American people. I am astonished as I look across the landscape of our national institutions at how many of them have been co-opted and turned to a use or to a purpose inconsistent with what ordinary folks and the exercise of common sense would want to see. We're seeing it. I mean, maybe the most pronounced example of what I'm talking about right this minute is what we see on college campuses across the country. I don't think Americans support that. So I do have enormous confidence in the American people, and I think they'll set things right in due course. But I think the other thing that I would say is, I'm a compliment to FAIR and to the fact that whoever's looking at this as somebody who looks to FAIR as a source of information, I always have. FAIR and other organizations that pay close attention to this particular topic, I don't really know what we would do without having the information that you bring to bear. So I would say to people, just as I do, dig into the writings and materials that you present. There are some other great organizations that do likewise. I just saw, I don't know if this is a particular note, except it just pops into my head at this point. I saw that the migration of inadmissible Chinese migrants has exploded. You know, so even as we have become numbed a little bit to how this continues to evolve, right from the beginning of the Biden administration, the massive unprecedented numbers, and that was when we were like 150,000 a month of encounters at the southern border. We're like double that now, and you almost get, you know, you get numb to it. But look at what they've done with temporary protected status for Venezuelans. Then look at the Chinese nationals. You've gone from, as a Fox News article said, I just saw the other day, if you just judge the first half of this fiscal year, it's a 7,000% increase. That'd be 70 times the numbers since 2021. And the expectation is if it continues at the current flow, by the end of this fiscal year, it'll be a 14,000% increase.
Yeah.
During the course of the Biden administration, after it started, you know, and they're military age males, and nobody can explain it.
No one can explain. And China probably won't take them back. That's their usual position.
The best Secretary Mayorkas says is that, well, we have this worldwide phenomenon of migration from communist China. Really? I don't think that's right. And it's just so the gaslighting's got to stop. The the lawlessness, and American people have to remain involved, overcome their disgust in order to continue looking carefully at what's happening, and use every opportunity to exercise their God-given right and the power that they have as American citizens to choose their government.
Well, thank you, Congressman Bishop, and we appreciate you too. Thank you for the kind words. We appreciate all that you've done to help with this fight. It's a future of our country depends on it.
Thank you very much for having me with you.
Thank you.